Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
just
can...
Just talk film! Sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action!
Every day is a great day. I get to talk with my friend Brad about movies.
Really?
Yes. Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast, unofficially the official podcast of your movie-going experience. I am Ryan. I am joined by Brad, who I've already introduced. Howdy-ho, Brad.
Hey, I'm back from L.A.
Yeah, that's... Man, you've been on a tear. You've been crisscrossing the western United States.
I'm flying high up in the sky. Where do you look? For the book, I don't remember the words.
Yeah. Reading Rainbow.
Movie Rainbow, yeah.
Welcome back. Every week we see a new movie and we podcast our experience of the world. I'd mentioned it last week. I'm really excited. Send Help is our film of the week. Sam Raimi comes back to directing.
And we're sending help reviewing this movie to you.
Yeah. I will say really quickly before we get into it, all the people that helped him make this, I go, oh, fuck, I forgot how he kind of, you know, Bill Pope started with him and Danny Elfman, and they're quietly, you know, the cinematographer and the composer of this picture. And you go, yeah, that's why he always makes great films. He has really great people that help him. And they never promoted Danny Elfman doing the score, so which is kind of interesting. I mean, it's not a traditional Danny Elfman score. I get it, but... you think they'd make kind of a deal out of it.
Is it, what we talk about later? The baffling, yeah, they'll probably remember. So, that new Dracula movie with Christoph Waltz?
Yeah.
Danny Elfman's score.
Really?
Yeah. And you would not think of it until, like, you saw the credits. You're like, what the, why is he working with this whole crew at all? Like,
but,
it's,
you know,
it's still, like, out of left field.
I mean, spread your wings and fly, Danny Elfman. It's cool. Stay tuned. We'll recommend the film or not. Play the trailer and then spoil the movie. We'll also talk about the nerd news of the week and stuff we've watched throughout the week. Good times had by all.
Indeed.
Well, before we start, Brad, what'd you go out to LA for?
So I've been wanting to go back to the new Beverly Quentin Tarantino's film only single screen theater. I was there years ago to watch Ninja Turtles when they had it on film, and so I was, you know, I'm looking for excuses to use my Go Wild pass before it expires in May. So I was like, what's screening there? And they had Batman Begins as a matinee. And then in the evening, a double feature of Bronson and Only God Forgives. I love Bronson. Amazing movie. Only God Forgives. Meh.
So was there a theme to it, or they just were showing it because it's on film?
On film, yeah.
That's pretty fun, though.
Yeah, the January calendar, like, it's an eclectic mix of stuff. February, though, is all pornos.
Oh,
which,
right.
I was like, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Why not?
Yeah, it's like, but they're all like 70s, you know, that era stuff. But yeah, no, it was just like a random, like, I know Batman Begins is probably there because, like, Regal had it. There's probably some, like, circuit that's going on. Like, it's cheap or
something. It's already out, so might as well just ship it there, too.
But I Bronson came out in 2008.
That was Tom Hardy's kind of big breakout, which led to him getting The Dark Knight Rises, right?
Yeah, like working with Nolan with like Inception and everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, Inception and then Rises.
Because, you know, in Bronson, he kind of has that.
Yeah, he's like in
Jack
Star Trek, he's like a really scrawny guy.
Yeah.
He bulked up for Bronson, and the performance is a tour de force. It's amazing. So,
and it led to him being Venom. So,
also true. But yeah, I just wanted to see it in the theater again, and being in film was like a added bonus. So I was like, yeah, screw it, for $16.
Yeah.
Jump on a plane.
So do you have
to
pay? So the Frontier thing, you pay for the seat, is how it works, or where does the $16 come from?
It's like the taxes and fees. So like,
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, the Go Wild Pass, I got it for $300. It's like $350 right now. Normally like $500. So yeah, but you can select the day before, day of, or the day before. You can log in and check fares, and the fares will be like taxes and fees only.
Mm-hmm.
And a flight to LA was $16.
And
that
that's you can only plan it out a day in advance.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're allowed to do weeks in advance, but it's more expensive. There's like a penalty fee.
Okay.
For going like that far ahead. So, but yeah, I also took the opportunity while I was out there to go check out some Back to the Future locations. So I visited Marty's house, the mall, Doc Brown's house. Shit, what else? The Burger King, where he leaves Doc Brown's garage in 85 and skates.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Where Power of Love kicks in. Yeah.
It's a fun opening.
Yeah. Like, I've been getting a lot of things in my feed about, like, the errors in Back to the Future, and this isn't one that, like, surprised me, but, like, no one's brought it up, is, like, Marty goes to Doc Brown's garage, turns on the machine, it's, like a two-minute, three-minute scene, blows it up, gets the call, and then ends the call with Doc, and he's like, oh, shit, I'm late for school. It's only been, like, 5 minutes, and he's like, like, he's surprised he's late for school, like, all of a sudden. Like, he didn't know that before he got there. Yeah. Like, he should have known on the way. Like, yeah. Anyway. But, yeah, it was cool, like, to see them in real life. And, yeah, the mall area is just, like, so dead. Like most malls. And then the Marty's house, like, the neighbor across the street has, like, a security camera. So if you walk on that side of the sidewalk, it's just like, you're trespassing, like constantly. So that's not fun. And then I also took a moment to go check out the office from The Office. and that's like an industrial area. And that also has like some security thing down the road. I wasn't there, but some guy turned around in this other complex and it was like, again, you're trespassing, get out of here, like type stuff. But the office, they cover the gate, so you can't get a shot through the gate like you can in the show. But I put my phone under the gate and took a picture from under it, so that was fun.
Did they have the machine where it clocked Michael Scott running 32 miles per hour?
No, that wasn't set up there. But the Britney bitch parking lane was there.
Oh, sweet. And I am back.
But, yeah, it's cool. And then, yeah, the Batman Begins screening, the audiences weren't great. Like, I ended up, after moving several times from weirdos sitting here, like, in weird places, I ended up sitting way in the back to the right. And the New Beverly has, like a two-thirds to the left and then an aisle and then like a short right side. And the lobby light like bleeds into that area in the back of the right. And I was sitting there and just like, for some reason, everyone in this 2-hour movie, like someone would get up, go to the lobby, come back, and then someone else would stand up and then go to the lobby. And for 2 straight hours, I'm not even exaggerating, like just up and down, different people, sometimes the same people. We're just like letting light into my space while I'm trying to enjoy this awesome movie. And then for Bronson and Only God Forgives, like 3 people around me were all chewing popcorn with their mouth open. So I got up and went to the back again. But yeah, but Bronson was awesome. Like all the moments hit right. People were laughing at the right stuff. It was great.
Nice.
Yeah, that was LA.
Very cool.
And now I'm thinking, so Camp Crystal Lake Tours in March is doing a screening and a tour for like $74. Oh. So I'm like,
Does it fly? Does Frontier fly to Connecticut?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, it's in New Jersey.
Well, close enough, I guess.
Yeah, it's cheaper to go to JFK and then drive an hour to Camp Crystal Lake.
Very cool.
But I think I might do that.
You should.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Another cinematic location thing.
Very cool. This week on Real Nerds, we saw Send Help. Brad, do you recommend Send Help? And God help you if you don't.
Yes, it's the greatest movie ever.
And I'll put the knife down now.
I think it's fun. I'm so conflicted about... What's her name's character?
Rachel McAdams?
Yeah. There's something she does in the third act that I'm just like... I was on board with her, and then she did that, and I'm like, there's no heroes of this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but like, does it need one? I don't know. But... And also, like, going into it, like, the whole Eat the Rich aspect of it, like, I was on board for, and it kind of, like, gets jettisoned really right away and just becomes, like, a Survivor show thing. So I was like, oh, come on, like, there's some good commentary that could be developed here, and it doesn't really go anywhere. You probably never saw Triangle of Sadness.
No.
But also, like, the second act of that movie is very similar to this movie, so whatever. It's fun. Some of the gore and like extremeness of the movie is great, and there's an awesome cameo in it. So yeah, I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's my favorite movie of the year so far. Because one for said cameo, I remember in my theater I did oh, and then I looked around and said, oh, I was loud when I said that. Strip away all that. You know, the thing I do love about Sam Raimi is his movies are usually pretty fun. And the writers of this film did Freddy versus Jason and stuff. So they kind of have this fun playfulness with their scripts always. And Rachel McAdams is awesome in it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think. She's so great in everything. I think one of her most underrated roles is Game Night.
Oh, yeah.
She's just great.
You saw that thing about Margot Robbie being like, I study her audition for The Notebook as like all her inspiration. Yeah.
It's just, she's just awesome. And yeah, it has the Sam Raimi kind of dark humor and the over the top violence. And he's just, you know what I love about his movies is he just keeps them moving. You know, there's really no downtime for his movies. He has a Simple Plan and things like that, but you know, he just keeps pushing the envelope, and I had a lot of fun. Here's a trailer for Send Help.
I'm going to be frank with you. You are smart. I know that you are great with numbers, but I just don't think you got it. As an executive, I see no value in you. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, what?
You know we have the Bangkok merger coming up. Prove me wrong. Oh, Linda, before you go, I forgot to mention, I've received a few complaints about you.
Complaints?
Noxious odors.
Oh, God.
Take your seats, you're a little bitch.
Who's joined the land of the living?
How long?
Have you been out? Day and a half?
Have you tried making a distress signal?
Or a bigger fire?
I was busy trying to keep us alive.
But getting us out of here, that should be your focus. Not being Susie Homemaker over here.
What did you just say to me?
Let's not forget, I'm your boss. You work for me.
We're not in the office anymore, Bradley. No help is coming. You just have to accept that this is how things are now. You ever hunt? I think I like it. You are stuck with an asshole boss. like I was. Although I'm betting I am a much nicer boss than you ever would have been. Except for maybe this part. I don't think we should ever leave.
Actually, you know what I do hate? Is I'm tired of all, like, Bradley's always being portrayed as, like, corporate douchebags.
Like, the Bradley and Chad yeah. are the most unfortunate names. Because I have a cousin, Chad, and he is nothing like any Chads I've ever met.
Right,
yeah. Or not never met, but are portrayed in film and TV. Yeah, and it, Rachel McAdams plays, I remember her last name is Little.
Linda Little?
Linda Little. And she is in strategic and planning. And Dylan O'Brien's dad promised her a promotion to a VP role.
Who's her dad?
His dad. Yeah, his dad that you never see except over his shoulders, Bruce Campbell, in the greatest cameo ever.
As a painting.
Yeah, because you know he's just put in there, obviously, for Sam Raimi. And people like you and I will see it and get really excited. But yeah, so she's promised this, and even President Palmer in it.
I was gonna say President Palmer.
Yeah, he's great in it. When he has that scene with her or with him.
I wish he was more in it.
I know.
Because he'd also be like a good counter to Brad.
Yeah, because he so the guy that's gonna get her job is Donovan. Because he went to college with him and he doesn't know what he's doing. He takes credit for the work she's turned in. And she's so meek and quiet that she kind of lets this happen to her. Not saying that it's okay. It's just that's what happens. And you learn that she is a big Survivor fan. And she auditioned for the show. And instead of her getting promoted... Man, I can't remember. Does he say he's going to fire her if she doesn't do well? Or she's just going to be demoted? I can't remember that part. But it's a really great interaction they have in his office.
Because he doesn't, like, shoot her down right away.
Yeah.
He kind of has the compassionate, like, look, like, I don't believe in you, but if you can show me what I'm looking for, you know, I'll totally open to reconsidering, like, my position about you.
Yeah, so they end up getting a private plane to Thailand, or I think... Anyways, on the way there, they see her audition video, and it's cheesy and goofy, but it's kind of fun. And then their plane experiences something, and it's crashing. And this is typical Sam Raimi, is that one Donovan dude gets sucked out, but he gets caught with his tie, and he's, like, stuck on the window.
That's right. She puts the windshield
pulls the window shade down.
Well, first he tries to, like, he wants her to give him her seat.
Yeah.
And he keeps trying to unbuckle her.
He's a piece of shit. Yeah. And he deserves getting sucked out of the airplane.
Yeah.
So they crash land. Oh, they crash in the ocean, and she's able to survive the crash, and she ends up on this beach. And she finds Bradley is also there.
Injured.
Yeah, he has a pretty severely broken leg or a shredded leg. I think it's just shredded. And he finds out that she's pretty good at this stuff. And how the turntables have turned. Because now she's the boss and showing him what to do. And it devolves into you think he starts to like her. And appreciates everything she does. And when she goes out to hunt for a boar, a boat passes and she doesn't say anything because she wants to stay there and be in charge.
Yeah, she seems to have a plan of, like, turning the tables on him that she wants to follow through on. And so, yeah, she doesn't take the help right away.
Yeah, and he's also such a piece of shit that she shows him what to do and... But he also kind of thinks there's something else going on, and he decides he's going to cook her dinner, and he ends up paralyzing her and with his raft that he's going to escape.
It's really great, like, his first tantrum, and she kicks him to the curb, and then he, like, struggles to survive and then has to, like, beg his way back into her good graces, and she's, like, basically developed her own island resort for herself. And then, he goes along with a lot of stuff, and you think he's, like, turned a corner, and then he betrays her by poisoning her.
Then she gets him back with it. And when he was paralyzed, man, my theater was squirming when it looked like she was cutting off his dick. Fun.
That was a great twist too, when it reveals, like, no, she was teasing him again.
Yeah. And, later on, his fiance shows up, and this is what you were talking about in our tease, is she purposely has the fiance fall over the edge of the cliff and has the opportunity.
Her guide.
I know, the poor guide, who's the nicest guy.
I know.
Because, okay, the fiance, I mean, she doesn't deserve to die, but
she was perfectly nice too, as I thought.
Like, yeah, but she also kind of has that, I don't know.
She's just snooty and rich, but she never makes fun of Linda, like, when she meets her in the office.
Yeah, because even when she sees her, she gets all excited. She says, Linda!
Yeah.
So she goes up, and I felt really bad for the guide.
Well, the guide, like, she can just push both of them off the ledge, but she bashes his head into the rock.
Yeah. And the guide, he's super nice. He says, show us where you're going, and we'll make sure you're safe. We have food and everything for you.
At that point, I'm like, okay, well,
you can't really root for her.
Linda's a villain. Bradley's a douchebag, but, like, she freaking murdered two innocent people. To protect what?
And the one twist that I kind of saw coming was the really nice house on the other side. I thought it was going to be a resort something.
Yeah. When they show that X marks the spot tree thing, I was like, that's coming back later. Is like, there's actually people.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a resort. That it's this rich and fancy house is kind of fun.
Yeah.
She ends up fucking killing him.
Yeah, when he escapes and travels over there. But that's the other thing too, is like, they set up the whole, like, cutting off his dick thing. And I was like, that would have been great to, like, really do in the finale.
Yeah.
But they don't. She just shoots him.
And then she comes back and has a best-selling book and is living the high life.
Yeah. And they show, like, after she does murder the two innocent people, like, she's kind of, like, depressed.
Yeah.
And, like, struggling with, like, what did I just do? But, yeah, she's, like, golfing at the end of the movie. So I'm like, oh, yes, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, you learn to deal with it.
Yeah. So she basically became Bradley. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I miss that version of Sam Raimi a lot. All his movies are usually pretty good. Even, I know a lot of people aren't the biggest fan of Oz the Great and Powerful, but there's still moments in it that I really enjoyed.
It's mostly a story problem.
Yeah. But he always delivers. Even in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, the way he works with the Scarlet Witch and the demons and things is very Sam Raimi-ish.
Yeah, the whole boar fight was like
there's
vicious and gory.
There was fun behind the scenes stuff. I just watched a little those clips that were online, and Sam Raimi's always the one throwing the blood on people, and he's fun. And I love when I went to the Alamo, they showed this clip from the first Spider-Man movie, where it's really funny. It's this outtake, and it's Tobey Maguire, and he says, "Oh yeah, Sam Raimi, he's a really great director." And it cuts to Sam, and he looks and he sees the camera, and then he looks at Tobey and he says, "And if I have to tell you one more time," so it's kind of this, like, really play on that he's a bad dude, but it's fun. So yeah, I had a lot of fun watching the movie. My theater was really packed, and so people were laughing and kind of along for the ride of the film. And it just proves, Sam can do moderately budgeted stuff. I'm guessing the budget for that's probably like $30, $40 million, maybe.
Yeah, I'm guessing a lot of that island wasn't really a real island.
Yeah.
Like, their camp was probably the set, and then everything else is probably just CGI.
Yeah. And it is what it is. It's easier to control the weather.
Yeah.
It's, because it has to be, there's no way it's a $100 million movie. So I'm sure it'll make money. And that's all I want. I just want Sam Raimi to keep making stuff. Again, he doesn't have to. He made $40 million not making Spider-Man. So he's good. Yeah, I just had a lot of fun with it. It's a really fun movie.
Cool.
Yeah. This is a big nerd news of the week.
It's real news!
In a move that outraged many, many people, including big-time Hollywood people, Alamo Drafthouse, which you kind of called, they started this mobile ordering where you go in while the pre-show's going on, you take out your phone, you scan a QR code, you order stuff, the people bring it to you. I understand it's probably for staffing. That way you can have multiple people in theaters and they don't have to keep on checking in the theater. They just get orders. And then when the 10 minutes before the movie started, you had to go back to writing pen and paper. Well, not anymore, my friend. Now they're slowly rolling out that everywhere is just mobile ordering now, which goes against what the Alamo is founded on. When I went and saw The Strangers Chapter 3 in 2 weeks, I was the only one in the theater, and I asked the...
No way.
I know. Well, you know, 11:30 on a Tuesday for not that popular of a horror franchise, probably why. But his name was Alex. He's very nice. And I asked him about it, and he said, yeah, people on the staff are really struggling with it too, because it's really against what Alamo believes in. And what's going to happen is, because just so, for example, when I go with my wife and when we had the mobile ordering, it's easy because you can say, hey, you know, my wife would say, hey, will you get me, you know, a Diet Coke and like the, she loves the goat cheese pizza. I said, yeah, but now when I'm in a theater and I have to use my phone, and I don't need anything, I'm going to get tapped. And she's going to say, hey, and it's not my wife's fault. It's what we have to do. So, and then the screens are going to come up. And
yeah, it's a real bummer. Thanks, Sony. Yeah, it's really like a, it really cuts to the soul of what that, like, in addition to that, like they closed like three of the Texas locations, which is founded in Texas. How can you close three Alamos in Texas? Well, remember,
they're also going to open up a new one in Denver that I haven't heard anything about.
Oh, the Glendale one?
Yeah. Wasn't that like 2-3 years ago? Oh. You talked about it?
Yeah. Are they doing it? Or is that just from 3 years ago?
No, I thought they were going to make have another location, but I haven't heard.
I can't imagine they go through with it with the way things are going right now.
Yeah. Obviously, they haven't, because it doesn't take that long to build a theater.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Yeah, does it also, I was thinking about this too, like, does it seem like their programming style has changed?
Oh yeah, big time.
And I was like, I want to do the research. Is it possible, like, they're only, like, their retro stuff is only Columbia and Sony stuff?
I would have to look at that. That's a good question. I don't know. Because what I've noticed, though, remember when we knew Steve, each Alamo had their own programmer. So they would put movies up that you wouldn't see anywhere else. And now they're very much the same.
Yeah, it seems like they don't get like Miami Connections or Street Fighters anymore.
No, the weirdest thing they have is they've been showing Twin Peaks episodes.
Right, which makes sense with the David Lynch dying and everything.
Yeah.
But overall, like, it's either, I don't know, like holiday themed stuff.
Yep.
It doesn't have like that like weird gem stuff anymore. Yeah,
because now they have weird Wednesdays, but the weird stuff they put there isn't that weird to me. And their Terror Tuesdays, and you know, I love horror films, but it's always The Thing, or, you know, pick some mainstream horror film. I mean, I can tell you what's playing in the future.
Yeah,
but you're right. It's very
it doesn't have like that hidden discovery thing. It just has like, oh, yeah, people like this. So like, yeah, like Terror Tuesday and Weird Wednesday are like the closest thing to that. And they do have some weird stuff. Like, what was it? God, I saw last year.
It's called Nausea. It's Michael Amarra-Diaz and David Lynch's Bohemian Vampire Jam.
Yeah.
And then Twin Peaks stuff. I mean, they still have Sad Girls Cinema Club, but I mean, I don't even know what that is.
But overall, like, the vibe is just different.
Yeah, I agree.
And like I said, it might be, I'm suspicious that like a lot of those are like, the rights are tied to Sony and Columbia for like a lot of those special screenings. So we'll see. But yeah, the whole mobile, like, yeah, it's just like a, you give an inch and people are going to like,
yeah.
As evidenced 2 weeks from now in the movie, like,
well, yeah, that's that one. Are, I can't wait to talk about
if it. People can be rude, they're going to be rude.
Yeah, it won't matter. I mean, I'm just looking up as we're talking. Their next movie party is 13 going on 40 or 30. I don't know who released that one. Cuz it doesn't say.
I would say Universal. Maybe not.
Let me look at the movie poster. It's definitely Sony. It's Revolution Studios.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's their next movie party.
So they're saving licensing fees by showing their own shit.
And it's sneaky because the only reason I know Revolution Studios is Sony is because all the Resident Evil stuff comes from there.
That's right. Yep.
So I'm guessing in Halloween we'll get just a bunch of Resident Evil stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, like we warned earlier when like Sony bought like it was like they had the Paramount decrees, right? Mm-hmm. To keep this from happening. And so yeah, they show like a Paramount or a Warner Brothers in the Alamo like first run.
Yeah.
But all their retro stuff now is just coming out of their own house.
Yeah.
So
guess we'll see Ghostbusters a lot. Yeah. Which we already do.
Yeah, it's a bummer. But I've also like gone to Regal more anyway these days.
I can't. Hats off to you for going.
Well, a couple days ago, notwithstanding. Or
it's really it's the mostly commercials and stuff that drive me insane. But I get why they have them. It's just there wasn't as bad when we go to the movies in 2 weeks. It wasn't as bad as the when I saw the 420 movie or the 430 movie. I was losing my fucking mind because it was no joke. 27 minutes of commercials. Yeah. And then they showed three or four trailers. So it was 32, 34 minutes before the movie started.
Last couple of weeks, like they've paired it back. It's been like two trailers, two to three, which is nice.
I wonder if people started saying something.
Yeah. But also like their like retro stuff has been great.
Yeah.
Like I've seen a lot of, I don't know, like Casablanca and Wizard of Oz, like
yeah,
like they have a different thing every day, so it's great,
which is fun. Well, we watch films throughout the week. We don't need programming for this in a segment I call "What We've Been Watching."
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
A couple things. First being the mystery movie was the new Dracula from Luc Besson.
So remind me who he's is Fifth Element guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The professional.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, sometimes my brain doesn't work right.
They made a Dracula movie. Christoph Waltz is Van Helsing in it.
Oh, fun. I can see him as a Van Helsing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a trailer for this.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, I have. It played before something.
Yeah, it's that's pretty very specific. It's pretty.
I was reading that it's not very gory or anything.
It's not like the opening is like there's a huge like gladiator style opening battle, which is gory. But everything after that is just like, I don't know, like romancing. It just revolves around like Dracula was like really into this princess, and she, while he's fighting that huge battle, she gets tracked down and killed, and then he vowed, like he swear, like he,
so it's a lot like he Bram sells a Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, he sells his soul to the devil, becomes immortal, and then just like seduces all these other women throughout the centuries.
Dracula likes to fuck.
He does. But like his plan is to like use them to lead them back to his one true beloved. So cut to present day. One of the Van Helsing captures one of those vampires that he created and gets her to like lead him to Dracula, who's what's his name? The guy that Aaron Taylor Johnson played, whatever that character was. The real estate guy.
Oh, Harkins.
Yeah, Harkins. He it plays out like Nosferatu, which you just saw. invites him into his castle and makes him a dinner. And then
and shows him a vampire cock.
Not that. but yeah, like, so I don't know. I guess the big changes are that like Dracula has these like stone gargoyle servants, like little gremlin guys, CGI gremlin guys that like make the food and set the tables and all that. and I guess he like poisons Harkins and traps him in the castle, and then finds out that his beloved is like, you know, his fiance. So he travels back to Vienna or whatever the fuck, and finds her and seduces her and convinces her to like be with him. And then Van Helsing and Harkins like try to stop it. And it's very much like, I don't know, like the 2000s era CGI. Like bombastic plot, like Van Helsing or Resident Evil style stuff. Yeah.
European style filmmaking.
Yeah. And I don't know, nothing really new.
No.
Kind of all the same stuff, but like Luc Besson style. I also saw The Relic for the first time, which was at Terror Tuesday.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it. I don't remember liking it very much.
So they warned us ahead of the movie that the movie was really darkly lit in general, but the movie rolled, and Tom Sizemore is like the main detective guy, and Penelope Ann Miller is the, it's about this like anthropologist who goes to some South American country, finds this relic, ships it back to Chicago Natural History Museum or whatever. They're hosting a big party or something to do fundraising, and the relic somehow gets out, and like there's a monster embedded in it, and it starts eating the Night Watchman and infecting people and hiding. This huge monster is hiding within the museum while this party is about to happen.
That's right. Fuck.
Yeah. Anyway, it's hard to watch because it's so darkly lit, and at a certain point, like, it's just like either bright spot or dark spot. And I'm pretty sure that the DCP file that Alamo had was corrupted. Because I went home and then found it on Tubi, and it's dark, but at least like you can make out who's what people's faces actually are when they're not just like full on screen. So that was shocking that like Alamo proofed that and said like, yep, we're going to screen it. Because I'm pretty sure it was a bad export. I also saw Return to Silent Hill.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah. It's boring.
That's what I heard. I heard it's pretty boring.
It has some like pretty scary sequences, but yeah, it just starts out with this like guy who's got a chip on his shoulder, starts a bar fight, gets tossed out. He's upset that someone died. I forget. I think it was his sister, maybe. And he has to go back to Silent Hill.
That's pretty much all their games, too, is that someone died for someone at Silent Hill, and they go back. It's very Japanese in its ghost story.
Yeah, he wanders back into this town, which is like covered in ash or whatever, in the forest. Some other person is helping him get there along the way. Then he meets this other chick while he's in Silent Hill that is like, looks exactly like his girlfriend who died, but like, oh, she has blonde hair, so it's not her, but she has the same facial features, and he's just like, oh, it's a different girl. But no, her hair color is different, so it's not her. and yeah, they like go into the hospital and like run into stuff, and I don't know. again, it was so boring I passed out. And then the last thing I saw was the YouTube sensation Iron Lung.
Oh, yeah.
The YouTuber Markiplier made...
Yeah, self-financed.
Self-financed, $8 million. Didn't have to go through a studio, so he just sold it directly to like Regal and AMC. And the cool thing is like they profit share, so the theater is actually making money on just the movie, not concessions. So I think they get like 50% of the ticket sales. So an $8 million movie made like, what, $30
million? Yeah, something like that.
So huge win for theaters, huge win for indie filmmaking, huge win for that YouTuber. But it sucks.
Yeah. It didn't get very good reviews. I did want to see it just because the story is interesting. I mean, I have no idea who he is. I don't watch YouTube for that stuff. But it's cool that he's self-financed, and I guess it's based on a video game, and they said it's very slow moving.
Yeah. What I watched before I fell asleep was this dude is in like a submarine tank or something.
The Iron Lung.
The Iron Lung.
Sure. I'm just guessing.
It's not an Iron Lung. It's just the title, but it's like some submarine. He's like floating around some like red goo or something. And he's like fiddling with buttons and saying like, fuck. Fuck. It's like that Mr. Show sketch where the guy's just swearing. But yeah, he's just like checking dials and being like, this is off. What's going on? What's happening? Fuck. What? And then, yeah. Like, I don't know what the readouts mean or what it has to do with the plot, but he's just like, yeah, something is going on outside the submarine, and he's confused, and the buttons are, like, moving around. He's, like, taking readings, and then I fell asleep and woke up, and in the end, he's like, the red goo is inside the submarine, and he's, like, he's like screaming, and, like, his arm gets ripped off, and the goo sounds amazing. But I'm like, what happened in this movie? Like, it went from like just knobs to like his arm getting ripped off. Was there any other location? I don't know. Yeah. And I'm like, I kind of want to know what happened, but I don't want to sit through it again. Because if it's just the buttons again, but if I legitimately missed a plot and like other scenes outside of the Iron Lung ship. Like, there's a monster in there, I think. I don't know. I don't know what this was about. Like, why? Like, I think he's an escape con, or he's, like, an ex-con that's, like, doing a job for money that, like, goes awry. But all I saw was, like, a dude messing with buttons and, like, being like, what's going on? Yeah. But the other thing, too, is, like, yeah, it's awesome that it's successful, but it's, like, he spent, like, 10 years... building an audience to get to this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if he just made the movie and put it out, like, it wouldn't have.
Yeah, no, it's
taken. So it's like, okay, so he's successful because he spent 10 years building a community of people to go see it. Like, it wouldn't have happened otherwise. So it's really not a win for indie filmmakers unless you like want to spend the 10 years not making films and just making YouTube content. And
yo hit that like button and subscribe,
and then hoping people like you enough to like get up off their ass and go to the movie theaters like 10 years later. So yeah, that's what I watched.
I only watched a couple things. I watched Dogma and the 25th anniversary Blu-ray 4K is awesome. And I love when Kevin Smith is hitting on all cylinders. He is so good.
Back when he had something to say.
Yeah, and there's moments in that movie that I still laugh. You know, Jason Mewes carries that movie. And I love the scene where they're in the diner with Bethany and the Last Scion. And, you know, she says, you know, do you believe in God? And he says, oh, great, the one fucking chick we meet at the abortion clinic is loves God. And then he says, let's get out of here. And she says, wait, I'll yell rape. It's just funny.
It really is amazing, like, to see Jason Mewes in Clerks as a guy who's like just there existing and forgetting his lines, mm-hmm. to like being like an actual comedic tour de force in
Yeah, and it's
Dogma and Jan's not about
Strike and there's Back. Just so much great moments in Dogma. You know, I always love when Loki and Bartleby are at the MUBI headquarters and they kind of, you know,
terrorize
yeah, the CEO because they have a false idol. And when you go back to, because Dogma was his fourth movie?
I think so.
Yeah, because it goes
Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy.
And then Dogma. Yeah. And he's building this universe that pays off with movies and Clerks 2 and is continuously there. And they did pop-ups of movies. And he's just, he's so witty. And the making of, they have a 2-hour making of on the Blu-ray. And I've heard some of the stories before, but you can tell that he's not stoned anymore. So he's much more thoughtful and more funny. And he doesn't rely on outlandish concepts, whether it's Yoga Hosers or Tusk, which Tusk is a fine film, but Yoga Hosers is, you know, Yoga Hosers.
Yeah.
But that movie's just so good. And all the people he had, and it's cool hearing the stories about, you know, he came out of Clerks was, and he was a hot shot, and then Mallrats kind of knocked him back down to earth. And then when he did Chasing Amy, it brought him back up again. And you know, what I always loved about him was his candor and his, you know, he says how shit, he doesn't even say Harvey Weinstein's name because of, I mean, obviously he's a piece of shit and what he had to go through to get that movie made, because originally Bethany was going to be Joey Lauren Adams from Chasing Amy. And they said, yeah, no, you're not doing that. If you want this movie, you're not doing it. And that they made that movie is also pretty astounding. And then we see Scott Mosier. I mean, now he started as a producer in there, but he directed the Grinch movie that made, you know, $400 million. And he's kind of his own thing now. It's cool to see.
Yeah, I always felt like Scott was like the secret sauce to his.
I agree.
Like he's the one, like Kevin had all his ideas and like Scott would like narrow them into like a.
Yeah, because he needed someone like that.
Yeah.
Because when you don't, and he can make any movie he wants. He's successful enough. I don't care. And I'll go see him. But even I waited so long to get the 4:30 movie because I didn't know if I wanted to spend more money on it. And I waited, no joke, I was at Barnes & Noble not even a month ago. And it was in the 50% off thing, and it was $12.99, so I paid $6 for it. And I'm not saying it's not worth anything, but
it's not as sharp and like
interesting. Not, it's not as biting, and I miss that voice so much, you know. And Ben Affleck when he's on in Kevin Smith movies, he's so good. When he and Loki are having that argument in the parking garage, and Loki realizes that Bartleby's snapped.
Great scene. Yeah.
It's so great. So yeah, I loved watching that movie. And
because you also think like Loki is like the villain.
Yeah.
Like but it's really Bartleby who's like
yeah
twisting him behind the scenes. And when he finally unleashes, it's like, oh, Bartleby's really the
yeah he's
angel of death, I guess.
Yeah. It's and Jason Lee is so good in it. It's
oh, there's all that too. Like he's. He's the villain.
Yeah.
But they turn the tables on him.
And George Carlin. It's just a great movie. And the 4K. I love now. I've said this before. They don't digitally clean it up as much. It looks really like a film. And it's well made.
I do kind of wish like they would go back and fix the shit monster.
Yeah, it looks okay.
It looks fine. But like. It's not like so good that I would like be precious about it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like with the restoration, like yeah, go for it. Like,
yeah, no, I agree. But yeah, if you haven't picked up the Dogma, is it 25? I can't believe, can't remember. No, it's 20th, right? No, it came out in 98, so it'd be
30 something.
Fuck,
whatever. 30th, yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever anniversary edition is, it's 25th.
Well, in 2 years, it'd be 30.
So it has to be the 25th, right? Because Chasing Amy was 98. 25 years would put it at 2001. I think that's right. 25 years, yeah. So yeah, so that was fun. And then there's always moments, Brad, in your life where you realize you've made a mistake. And mine is, my wife had never seen The Batman. I know. And I go, man, I've watched that movie probably 5 or 6 times. And she thought the last Batman movie. And I'm like, my wife, I watch movies all the time and I do a podcast. She thought the last Batman movie was The Dark Knight Rises. I said, you haven't seen The Batman? And she said, which one's that?
Well, it was after the pandemic, so.
Sure.
Maybe it got lost.
My wife's, one of her favorite movies is 7. And I told her, I said, well, you'd really like The Batman because the Riddler in it is a serial killer who leaves clues. And she said, okay, I mean, I guess we can watch it. And I put it on and she was enthralled. And she said, it's so moody and it has so much character. And I said, I know, it's really great, right? And yeah, the movie's awesome. Yeah, I really like that movie. It is. And, you know, I forgot it's almost 3 hours long.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really feel like it at all. And because there's, you know, it moves well and it's dark.
God, I'd love to see that big screen again.
Yeah. And so it was really cool. And my wife really liked it.
Nice.
She really likes those kind of dark stuff. Her favorite Batman movie is Batman Returns. So she kind of likes that darker.
Which, I don't know. In hindsight, that's really pretty cartoonish of the.
I mean, I think it is too.
It's not Batman and Robin, but compared to just the first Batman.
Yeah.
It's a little silly.
So yeah, so it was fun, and I was really disappointed in myself that I hadn't shown it to her before because she loves that stuff. Because she would as much as it pains me, she'd much rather watch that than Spider-Man. she'll never admit it because she's my wife.
Has anyone done like a dark and brooding Spider-Man take?
No,
because it wouldn't make sense.
Wouldn't work. I mean, maybe that Spider-Noir that's coming out with Nick Cage.
Yeah,
because he's. I mean,
read something that like Nick Cage's inspiration was like part Humphrey Bogart and part Bugs Bunny. So,
well, all right.
I mean, he already did an animation though. So,
yeah. So it was really cool. My wife loved it. And
I was gonna say they should do an absolute Spider-Man, like do the Batman take of Spider-Man. Fuck it, I'll do it.
Do it. That's what I watched this week.
I mean, Spider-Man's parents are dead too.
Yeah. They're fucking dead. Next week, man, back-to-back weeks movies for me. Jason Statham returns with Shelter. You know what? I'm not even exaggerating.
I need to know if you're going to the shelter.
I have not seen a trailer for this movie. I have no idea what it's about.
I think I saw it once.
Hey, you know, Jason Statham's the new Liam Neeson. I mean, he has a movie come out every January. The Beekeeper. What was the one last year? What was it called? Where he's a construction
working man. The working man?
Yeah. I heard they're making... Well, I've heard they're making a Beekeeper 2, so Beekeeper must have made a lot of money.
Overseas.
Yeah, of course. So next week, we'll see you at the movies.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot of a real nerd. We'll turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!